Hello, welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always my host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at EastSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support of air is very much appreciated. We're joining you a few minutes after we just got out of the locker room here with the Phoenix Suns. They fall to 4-18 on the season with another tough loss tonight to the Orlando Magic, 99-85. Coming into this game, Brendan, we both thought that Warren and Devin Booker would be playing, but unfortunately, neither of those guys played. Warren sat with ankle soreness while Devin Booker sat out with a late scratch due to a toe injury, which Igor Koshkov said after the game happened before the Clippers game. So that kind of begs the question why he was playing in that game as well. But he ended up missing tonight's game as well as Warren, and that meant a lot of different roles for guys like Josh Jackson and DeAndre Ayton and Elia Kobo. So I'll toss it back to you because there's actually a lot to go through in this game, even though it was a 14-point loss to the Magic. But what was your main takeaway?
Yeah, I think it was just kind of watching how it all unfolded with what guys were asked to do, what they were able to do, what they pulled off. Just a lot of different situations in the game than we're used to. I mean, Two best players probably on this team not playing, and I think Jackson was kind of the guy you couldn't take your eye off, for better or worse, throughout the whole game. Started really hot, and then I don't think he's the reason that they lost the – it wasn't a lead, but kind of lost control of the game, but he certainly didn't help. And you look at the stat sheet and it's pretty ugly for him.
Yeah, let's just go through that real quickly, the stat sheets for a few guys. 5 of 21 was Josh Jackson. I think he started 4 of 9 at one point. 5 of 21 from the field, 10 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 steal. If you don't look at the field goal attempts, Brandon, that's a good game for Josh Jackson, probably his best game of the season. But then we look at guys like DeAndre Ayton, who was 9 of 16 with 19 points, only 6 rebounds and 0 blocks. Mikal Bridges only played 20 minutes and only had 2 points, 1 of 5 from the field, 0 of 3 from 3. So that kind of shows you he's in his rookie wall. And then Elia Kobo started point guard in Booker's absence, and he played 29 minutes and he had 9 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 of 4 on 3. So let me go back to you, Brendan, with your first free throw. Who was it for you?
Yeah, it's tough because we kind of saw the whole up and down for Jackson. But I think maybe I'll go first half Josh Jackson. Was my first positive for the game. My first free throw he really did make a few passes in this game that were like high level legit playmaking, like you could envision that really projecting and becoming something for the first time, not all season, but kind of to see him all back to back to back like that, it felt like he was seizing that opportunity. And it didn't end well, of course, like we already said, but I think that it kind of came alive, his game, in a really cool way as a playmaker. And he wasn't forcing the shot. He was really probing the defense, trying to find passing lanes, and kind of pulled this random unit of guys into being close at halftime, which I think has a lot to do with him.
Yeah, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was either a tie game or like a 2-point game at half. So it's a really close game for the Suns before the Magic blew open there in the fourth quarter. But as far as Jackson goes, I think someone asked him about this, but I didn't exactly hear his answer or remember the answer. But someone asked about Booker and Warren being out and how his mentality or his role changed. And you noticed every time Booker was out last year, and also Warren. I mean, Jackson, usually when both those guys are out in the past year or so, he's taken 20-plus shots. And that trend continues tonight, 5 of 21 from the field. So do you feel like when both those guys are out, Josh feels like this is not my team, but like this is – I have to take over now. Like the team needs me.
I think, until the roster drastically changes, I think it's true. And he said the same. Yeah, his answer was basically like, they said, do you feel like you need to step up? And he said, oh, I know I have to step up for us to be able to compete. And that's no surprise to anybody who's ever heard Josh Jackson talk. He's a super confident player. And for better or worse, that's going to be his MO when he comes out there, especially when the playmakers aren't on the floor or aren't playing. But the other thing I was happy with, as far as him evaluating himself in the locker room today, was he acknowledged that the shot selection was bad. I mean, he said, like, out of nowhere, no one even asked him, like, what do you need to improve on from tonight? He just said, I think I took the wrong kinds of shots in the wrong situation. So, I think that's part of growth too, right?
You're starting to get it.
You don't. It's not just about coming out and scoring and assisting. It's about learning from when you don't do that stuff effectively. So I think, all things considered, if it actually does result in some growth, I think it was a really solid opportunity for him, and hopefully things are back to normal for the next game and he can kind of figure out his role but still do a lot of that same stuff.
generally, before I go back to my point, how do you feel Jackson's played over the past week or so? Because it seems like it's slowly starting to get there. I mean, the scoring and the inefficiency is still there, but at least the all-around performance. I tweeted this tonight. I feel like over the past few games, we're starting to see more and more of the Kansas version of Josh Jackson.
Yeah, I think that's exactly true. And yet another missed dunk today, which is just – it's such a random part of his game that makes no sense for somebody so athletic. But I do think he's starting to kind of – you see the switch flipping a little bit, and not in a unsustainable way, but I think it's a mentality thing that you can kind of watch shift a little bit, and hopefully, like I said, it can continue.
Yeah, that's for sure. We'll continue to monitor Josh Jackson moving forward, but for my first free throw, it's actually going to be – the guy who's been getting actually a lot of love on the podcast lately, and that's Jamal Crawford. 18 points on 5, 13 from the field. He also chipped in, it looks like, 4 assists, 2 rebounds, 2 turnovers. But it's 31 minutes for Jamal Crawford. I didn't even know it was that much. But he continues to show and prove that he's one of the more valuable guys on the roster already. He's been around for less than 2 months, and his scoring 5 straight games now, double-digit points, career high, or not career high, but season high for Jamal Crawford, and I have 18 points. He's starting to, I think, embrace his role, and the guys around him are starting to get used to him being there as well.
Yeah, I think he's become really smart about kind of choosing his spots, where there was a lot of possessions early in the season where he kind of hijacked it, I think, trying to play himself into comfortable shape and rhythm in the season because he signed so late in the summer. But I think now, you know, he's super comfortable deferring. He's taking catch-and-shoot threes, like being an off-ball player just as much as anyone on this roster. But I think he also knows – within a possession or even just over the stretch of a game when he needs to take control.
Yeah, that's the one thing to keep watching about Jamal Crawford. There's really not much else to say about him because it's been consistent for him the past week plus about him getting in double digits with points and being a consistent hand as far as secondary playmaking goes. But I'll toss it back to you for your second free throw.
Yeah, I really badly want to say Daniel House, who played for the Rockets today and played incredibly well. I had to shout him out because he's my one true love and he's not on this team anymore. But they signed him to the rest of the year deal, and he played really well. But he's obviously not my actual guy. I'll go with Ryan Anderson for the second one. 20 minutes today, and I was kind of wondering if we would see him, if we would see Bender. Maybe the listener who asked us when we would see Bender next kind of guessed it, but that didn't end up happening. It was Anderson, and I think, you know, compared to early in the season, he was able to stay on the court. He, you know, he didn't get challenged on defense, which was kind of weird. He was guarding Aaron Gordon in space a lot of the time, and Gordon wasn't really able to attack him. He had some back tightness before the game and was questionable to play, so maybe that had something to do with it. But all things considered, he was moving the ball, taking open shots. He didn't make a single three, but I think overall, like, maybe that's a guy you start to think about giving some spot minutes here and there if he can actually put together stretches where he's not just a dumpster fire, which was unfortunately a lot of the situation early in the year.
Yeah, that's true. He played 20 minutes tonight, 1 of 4 from the field. Didn't do much as far as box score goes, but he was a nice spacing presence out there. Before we go any further, I was asking, you actually told me a quick story about Anderson from the locker room there. He was talking to Dave King of Brightside of the Sun. He seems like he knows his role here and he's embracing whatever is going on in Phoenix.
Yeah, he was just saying basically, like, he's in constant communication with the team about his place on the roster and kind of what to expect night to night. Obviously, tonight he actually was on the court for a while, but, you know, I think he has a good perspective on things, knowing, you know, the reality of the situation. I mean, he's talked openly about what happened in Houston, that he just kind of had the ground fall out from under him, starting for a great team and then not really even playing at all come the playoffs. So I think that's an interesting guy to have around, somebody who is so open and honest about stuff like that. I mean, I think that can be valuable. There's a lot of veterans who I think are afraid to face the realities of a situation like that. So hopefully, like I said, if he is somebody who maybe 6 minutes here, 5 minutes there, if he can actually hold his own and kind of be a behind the scenes guy as well, I mean, there's a lot worse players to have. I think that's what you were hoping for with guys like Jared Dudley and Tyson Chandler in the past, and the Suns might have found an even better one with Anderson.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, I think we both know that he's going to be stretched and waived and be making $5.2 million for the next 3 years from the Suns, whatever happens at the end of this year. But for me, I'm actually going to, for my second free throw, I'm going to go off the Suns roster. Elia Koba does deserve some mention here. He was a +2, the team leader in plus minus. Actually, Rashawn Holmes was with a +3, but Okobo had 9 points, 2 assists on 4 of 11 from the field. He did pretty well in his first start in a while. But I'm going over to Orlando's side of things because I keep seeing Nikola Vucevic have these monstrous games. Tonight, at 25 points, 15 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and a block. I don't know what else to say about Vucevic because this is out of nowhere this year. I don't think anyone expected him to keep doing this. He's averaging like 20 and 10, 20 and 12, shooting 40% from three. So what do you think about Vucevic overall as a player? Because I tweeted during the game that I think that Vucevic, especially after judging Mo Bamba with the way they did, and Bamba only played 16 minutes tonight, I could see a team like the Lakers getting him at the trade deadline and being an absolute perfect fit next to LeBron for at least four or six months.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a super in-demand player now that he's kind of continued. I mean, he started shooting threes a few seasons ago, and he just keeps getting better. We saw, I mean, those guys get paid. Players that can shoot three and at least play defense and hold up around the rim and rebound the ball, that's going to be a super valuable player, and they should trade him because there's no sense in having a 30-year-old center on the roster when the rest of the guys are 23. So, yeah, I'm wondering where he ends up because I also want to see this Orlando core. Like, I want to see Bamba and Gordon and Isaac playing together and trying to make it work.
Really quickly, because I don't want to spend too much time on the Magic, but what do you think about their young core? Because I just think that Gordon, Bamba, and Isaac, that's really good on paper, but I still feel like they're at least two, especially Bamba and Isaac, they're at least 2 years away from even being much.
Yeah, I don't think they all three can play together. I feel like the Magic are going to trade Gordon at some point. They have his contract goes down every year and has a bunch of weird stuff to make it super duper tradable. Bamba today, I was excited to watch him because I really haven't seen him. I don't watch Orlando much, and obviously he was a super hyped, interesting draft prospect. He's very raw on offense.
Raw, yeah.
Very, very raw on offense. So he bobbled a pass, turned over a pick and roll. He would have had an easy layup possession right after that. He airballed a three. So, yeah, not to spend too much time on Orlando, but my first impressions were not great because I don't think Isaac showed me much either.
Neither of them really did for me. But before we go any further on our second segment here, which is our free throws, I want to tell you guys really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter page, at Locked On NBA Net. If you're not already following them at Locked On NBA Net, you should, because you can follow along guys like me, Brendan, David Locke, all really every single asset and really writer on the Locked On Network in the NBA section is a really good follow. So if you're not already, make sure to follow at Locked On NBA Net because I see our following slowly growing over there and it's really cool to see. So make sure to go follow them. But I'll toss it back to you for our flagrant foul. Brendan, what's yours?
I think Trevor Ariza to me is, I might have just stolen yours.
Yeah, he stole my thunder there.
Yeah. The effort for him is just really frustrating to watch. I think I think most people knew the situation. There was already rumor right around when the season was starting about where he might end up by the end of it. I think you sign a guy like that, doesn't really fit the timeline of the roster. Buyout, trade, you start to talk about what that might be. We've obviously done that ourselves, but you would hope that at least until December 15th, 2 months of the season, that he would be able to be a team, productive part of the team, a team player, somebody who actually kind of tries to fit into what's going on, and unfortunately it just doesn't look like that's happening a lot of the time, and it doesn't always show up in the stats. Like you can't really pick a nit with his game tonight.
If you just looked at the box score, not the game, you'd think he had a good game,
and that's true a lot of the time with him, because I mean he's filling his role, but I think the best example of it was he pulled up for a jumper or drove to the rim and thought he got fouled by Terrence Ross, complained to the ref for 2, 3, 4 possessions, like consecutively, over and over, every time he got back to that ref, and Terrence Ross scored probably 4 or 6 points in that stretch because Ariza was more concentrated on that than, you know, playing team defense. So, you know, maybe that's just zoning in on one thing too much, but it is frustrating when it happens game after game.
It's a trend. It really is a trend because you see it multiple times now where Ariza, one thing I noticed for me tonight as far as the effort goes with Ariza was, he gave up on Ross off a screen. I think it's a possession after you just mentioned. He gave up off the screen to Ross that curled him to the corner for the easy mid-range jumper, and he died immediately off that screen, didn't even try. And then the next possession down, I believe, after Ross made that, they came down. Suns, I think, made a basket with Josh Jackson. And the next time down, Ariza tries, not even the attempts to get an offensive rebound, just Vucevic, whoever it was under the boards, just easily swipes it away, and Ariza just stands there and doesn't move a single inch. So what do you just think about Ariza? We're now – December 1st is going to be tomorrow, so we're 15 days away from the eventual thing. Do you think at this point that if December 15th, maybe December 16th or 17th, he's gone?
I think it seems pretty likely. We're starting to hear more rumors now. Markelle Fultz, Frank Ntilikina, both guys that have been mentioned as targets for the Suns, and I think that that December 15th deadline does seem pretty real for this team. I think whether it's Ariza or players on other teams that can get moved at that time too, it seems like that's going to happen. He just needs to get out a notebook, get out something on his phone, mark the tallies of how many games are left until December 15th, yeah. And just take it one at a time, give his all for 36 minutes a night, and then he can go play with the Rockets or wherever he's going to end up, because it's fine that that's inevitable, but he plays for the Suns right now.
We should touch on this really quickly with Ariza, too, because, I mean, we should spend a few more minutes on him, because that was giving me my flagrant foul, and there's really not much significant negatives on this team outside of maybe Troy Daniels in his 15 minutes, but that's kind of what you expect at this point for guys and played in a few weeks. But for Ariza, what do you just think about the future with him and this overall his signing here? You're supposed to be 1 year, $15 million, and it just hasn't turned into what anything and on you probably both sides expected to happen.
Yeah, it seems that the most puzzling part is I was talking to Dave from Brightside about this during the game. I just don't know what he was expecting. You know, like this was legitimately, as I say all the time, to iron it down. Like, this is one of the worst teams in NBA history last year. Like, that's just the reality. They got number one overall pick. They were the worst team on offense and defense. It wouldn't have been difficult to know what you were getting into. Yeah. So, you know, the fact that it's only been 22 games now, and it's already clearly getting to him. And look, like, of course, losing would get to me, too. I can't imagine being in an environment where you're so drastically different from being what they were, 65 wins last year. Yeah. You can't get much different, but at the same time that it's not far from what he should have expected going in. So that's been the most puzzling part. But I mean, I think from the Suns' perspective, like, if you hold up your end of the bargain and you treat him well, let him play, up his value, keep his value high, give him, obviously they already gave him his contract, and yeah. Maybe that does do something for you around the league, and guys can look at Jamal Crawford's kind of getting the same treatment here. Maybe that does mean something. It's kind of harder to quantify when you watch Ariza not do what he's supposed to be doing, and you're like, oh, well, hopefully in the future the free agents like the Suns more. That's tough to balance, but maybe.
I think we should just mention this quickly on Ariza before we go to our third segment here, which is a stat to watch that we saw with Tyson Chandler, but once Ariza eventually leaves, I think we're both in agreement that he is going to leave probably within the next month, that his effort is going to look way different than it was outside of Phoenix.
Yeah, I think he'll go to Philly or L.A. or back to Houston, and he'll look exactly like he did on the 65-win Rockets last year.
Just how it goes with the Phoenix Suns, it seems like. But for me, my stat to watch, I'll start off here. It's 25, which is 25% on threes, 7 of 28. You should probably expect less threes with Booker and Warren out of the lineup, who all of a sudden TJ Warren is shooting plus 40% from three. So those are two of the best guys on the team. 7 of 28 for 25%. And compared to the Magic, who were also 8 of 27 for 29.6%. So neither of those teams could really shoot the three tonight. But the Suns rely, almost live and die at this point, outside of DeAndre Ayton's postability, that they live and die by the three-pointer. And when you're shooting 25% from three and you put up 85 points, that kind of tells you all I need to know.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's something I noticed too, because we had just talked about a week ago about, oh, you know, they're taking over 30 again. That hadn't happened in a while. Now, the past couple games, it's been back below, and obviously tonight, no Booker, no Warren. It was going to be tough to even pull out anything close to good spacing, but really, if Troy Daniels didn't play in this game, it would have been even worse. So I guess maybe that is a positive of him being out there. My stat to watch, I'll go with two. I want to mention one really quick, just because it's interesting to me. We got to watch D.J. Augustine for the first time, and Orlando's talked about as the other team in the league that desperately needs a point guard, and they probably do, but I guess my numbers would be 16-6. That's what he put up today. And that shows, I mean, the Magic are a 500 team, basically. The Suns only need somebody that good to elevate this roster, you know, and it's like Orlando really needs a point guard. No, the Suns really need a point guard. Orlando has D.J. Augustine.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I know we touched on maybe the Memphis recap when they were here, but why didn't they sign Shelvin Mack?
I couldn't tell you. It's also a guy Koshkov has a relationship with and ran his system there, so I have no idea. But my other stat to watch, I think, would be five, and that's the number of free throw attempts the entire starting lineup had today. Oh, wow. Just a continued trend, and another thing that the guys, I think, are aware of, because Ayton said it himself today. He said, you know, the next part of my game is to just get to the line more and be more aggressive. I think he's aware of that, just like Jackson's aware of the shot selection stuff, but 5 free throw attempts for the entire starting lineup is pretty crazy, especially when you compare it to their field goal attempts, which is above 40.
Yeah, that's really rough to look at as far as the stats go. But anything else as far as tonight you wanted to hit on? Because the Suns are now 4-18 on the season. The Magic are 11-12. Final score, if you guys didn't know already, 99-85 was the final score for the Orlando Magic over the Suns.
No, I guess just to cap off our Ariza rant episode, we get to see what he has to say about LeBron James on Sunday. We'll watch that one next and figure it out.
Yeah, by the way, guys, we're not going to be with you on Sunday. As you guys know, it's usually Monday through Friday. We'll be back with you on Monday to recap the Lakers game and also talk about really some more commentary as well from whatever we think of on Monday. Maybe a point guard tree happens by then. That's probably wishful thinking on my part. But until then, guys, we'll be back with you on Monday to talk about the next game, which is the Lakers.